Vitam Stam Sajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitam Stam. Manchakapajupastaki Pisan Vivita Pichanam Pavaneva Vajnavanam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's September 5th, 2016 in Rotterdam, Belgium. A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the Best Among Exalted Devotees, Text 14. Ya etat kirtayan mayam,
ya etat kirtayan mayam,
twaya gita midam nara,
twaya gita midam nara,
twam chamam chasmaram kale,
twam chamam chasmaram kale,
karma bandhat pramuchyate,
karma bandhat pramuchyate.
Christian. Yaha.
Yeah.
Anyone who?
Anyone who.
Etat.
Etat.
This activity.
This activity.
Kirtayat.
Kirtayat.
Chants.
Chants.
Mayam.
Unto me.
Twaya. Bayu.
Gitam.
Prayers offered.
Prayers.
Idam.
This.
Yes. Naraha.
Naraha.
Human being.
Human being.
Twam.
You.
Cha.
Cha.
As well as.
As well as.
Mamcha.
Mamcha.
Me also. Smaran.
Remembering.
Kale.
Kale.
In due course of time.
Karma
bandhat. From the bondage of material activities. Pramuchyate. Becomes free. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who always remembers your activities and my activities also, and who chants the prayers you have offered, becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. So this is again Nisingadev speaking to Prahlad Maharaj. Purport. Here it is stated that anyone, actually, as I read through the purport, I was really struggling with this purport yesterday. I read it in the morning, and then I was thinking about it all day. I was in Brussels all day, so I couldn't do much more than think about it. And when I got back in the evening, I went and researched all the commentaries of the Acharyas, and I'm pretty sure that I think I know how to explain this. But if anybody has any further thoughts on this purport, that would be most welcome. So if I want to read the verse again, and if you can keep the verse in mind as we're going through the purport, and to try to connect the purport to the verse. So the first sentence of the purport and the last sentence of the purport is very clearly connected with the verse, but the whole middle portion of the purport does not have an obvious and immediate connection to the verse. So if you have any thoughts as we go through this, again, I'd be very grateful, because I did a lot of prayer and meditation and study to try to figure out why Srila Prabhupada said this particular purport with this particular verse. So again, the translation is, one who always remembers your activities and my activities also, and who chants the prayers you have offered, becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. Prabhupada's purport. Here it is stated that anyone who chants and hears about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, and in relationship with Prahlad's activities, the activities of Nisingadev, gradually becomes free from all the bondage of fruitive activities. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.15 and 2.56, 215 is Yam Hina Vyate Yantyate Purusham Purushar Shaba Samaduka Sukham Dhiram So Mirta Vavakalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Dukeshu Anudignamana Sukeshu Vigatas Priha Vitaraga Bayakroda Stita Dir Muni Uchite. One who is not disturbed, in spite of the threefold miseries, who is not elated when there is happiness and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a stage of steady mind. The devotee should not be aggrieved in an awkward position, nor should he feel extraordinarily happy in material opulence. This is the way of expert management of material life. Now that sentence right there, this is the way of expert management of material life, relates to the previous verse. Because, in fact, all this section seems to relate to the previous verse. Because in the previous verse, we had the word kushalena, by acting piously, which Srila Prabhupada explained in that purport. He said, the word kushalena is very important. One should live in the material world very expertly. And in the previous verse, it was talking about Prahlad Maharaj being free from pious and impious activity by feeling happy when things were good and by acting piously to get rid of bad things. You remember that? Everybody who was here on Friday. So it seems that Prabhupada was, with all this, referring back to the previous verse when he said this is a way of expert management of material life. So going on. Because a devotee knows how to manage expertly, he is called Jivan Mukta, which again relates back to the previous verse where Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, he said an exalted devotee like Prahlad Maharaj is Jivan Mukta. He is liberated even in this life in the material body. So going on, as Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Iha yasya harir dasye karmana manasagira nikilashva bivastasu jivan mukta sa uchite. A person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person. Even within this material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. Because of constantly engaging in devotional service in any condition of life, a devotee is free from all material bondage. Bhaktir punati mam nishta swapakam api sambhavat. Even one born in a family of meat eaters is purified when he engages in devotional service. Bhagavatam 11.14.21. Srila Jiva Goswami cites this verse in logically supporting that anyone who chants about the pure life and activities of Prahlad Maharaj is free from the reactions of material activity. So do you all understand my difficulty with this? Did everybody follow or no? Ya etat kirtayan mayam tvaya gitam idam nara tvam chamam chasmaram kale karma bandhan prayuchate. One who always remembers your activities, Prahlad's in other words, and my activities also, in other words, the Singhadev's, and who chants the prayers you have offered becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. So the first sentence basically just restates the verse. And the last sentence in the purport restates the verse. And all the rest of the purport, Prabhupada says, what? That one should not be disturbed by happiness and distress. That one should be equipoised. And that this is expert living in the material world is to be equipoised, and even if you're born in a low family, you can learn how to do that. And if you do that, you're Jivan Mukta, you're liberated in this life. So why would he say that? That in the previous verse, it was saying how Prahlad was going to do that, and therefore Prahlad was very expert, and therefore Prahlad was liberated in this life. And here it's saying if we hear and chant about Prahlad and Nisingadev, we become liberated. And then in the purport, Prabhupada talks about how we should be equipoised. So any thoughts about why Srila Prabhupada would spend practically the whole purport on that? Yes?
I was thinking maybe because Prahlad's life is exemplary, so if we hear about it, then we get those qualities which I mentioned then in the middle.
Because in the previous verse it's saying that that's what Prahlad's doing. So if we just hear about what he's doing, then we're able to do it also. Any other thoughts on this? Because Prabhupada is not emphasizing in this purport hearing about the devotees or hearing about the Lord. He's emphasizing being equipoised. So I went to Jiva Goswami Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. I did not find this verse 11.14.21 quoted in Jiva Goswami's commentary on this verse. So Prabhupada saying that Jiva Goswami cites this verse as evidence, but he must cite it in a different place other than his commentary on this verse. And I didn't have time after coming back from Brussels to look extensively. But when I was looking in Jiva Goswami's commentary, his main point was that the only way we get really liberated is if we love the Lord and his devotees. That all other kinds of liberation fall short. And such a conclusion makes sense very logically, because the source of our bondage was a moving away from love of the Lord. And the ultimate liberation is being with Krishna in a situation of love. Every other kind of liberation is partial. And of course, we're studying Manushiksha, and this is particularly true, particularly discussed in the fourth verse of Manushiksha, which we'll be looking at tomorrow. How one should be free from this desire for liberation, even up to the point of wanting to enjoy the opulences of the Lord in Vaikuntha. But one should come to the point just of love of God. That's the ultimate state of freedom. Although it's at odds with the desire for freedom, which is quite interesting. So to attain ultimate love, one has to give up the desire for ultimate freedom. And in that way, you attain ultimate freedom. Of course, Jesus said things like that too. He said, one who gives up his life for my sake finds his life, and one who tries to find his life in the world loses everything. Of course, Prahlad Maharaj also said something similar. He said that we are naturally happy. Our unhappiness comes as soon as we look for happiness. As soon as we say, oh, I'm going to go seek happiness, then we're miserable. And if we're situated in our own position, we're naturally happy. So all of our bondage comes from a turning away, Bahirmukhi, turning away our face from the Lord and his devotees, and trying to ourselves become the master, trying to love ourselves separately from love of Krishna and love of the devotees. Of course, it's interesting, many people will claim that you have to start with loving yourself. But actually, one has to start with loving God. When we start with loving God, we then naturally also love ourselves. Like, I remember when we met with Srila Prabhupada in 1976, and my son, who was just a small child, was sitting on my lap, and Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving her child without any expectation of return, in the same way one should love Krishna. And my father said, will loving her child help her to love Krishna? And Prabhupada said, no, but loving Krishna will help her to love her child. So it's the same with ourself. When we love Krishna, amazingly, we will love ourselves. Generally, in material life, we're trying to put ourselves at the center, and we're trying to love ourselves, but we don't end up liking ourselves very much, do we? Most of us, if we're honest, we say, oh, you know, I have so many problems. I don't really like who I am. I don't really like what I'm doing. I'm not happy with my activities. You know, and also in Manushiksha, in the fifth verse, we look at this struggle between our ideals and our behavior, right? That we have a certain ideal that we preach and that we believe, but we don't necessarily act that way. And then we're full of shame and grief and all these things. And we're struggling to like ourselves. You know, materialistic people will say, just love that you're imperfect. But that doesn't really work very well. You know, just like, well, I'm going to love all my imperfections. And it's not very satisfying. So we try to love ourselves separately from Krishna, and we end up then in illusion, because it's not really possible. I'm part of Krishna. Krishna is the super self. He's the self of the self. So Prabhupada compares it to trying to feed the hand by rubbing food on the hand instead of putting it in the stomach. So the real way we're going to find love of self is by finding love of God. And that is the real cure. That gives us actual freedom from all of our miseries, from all of our illusion, from all of our bewilderment, you know, from all of our physical suffering, from all of our mental suffering, from all of our relation suffering. So where are we going to get that real love? We're going to get it from the devotees. And this is the main point Jiva Goswami makes in his commentary. That love of God is not possible without the devotees. It's just not possible. And we find in the same way that everyone who teaches about love of God will make the same point. You know, a lot of the Protestant revolution was, we want to have Jesus without all the saints, right? That was one of the complaints. We don't want to worship Mary, we don't want to worship the saints, we just want to worship Jesus. And there's a general mood like that in the world. I want to find God myself, I don't want to have a guru, I don't want to be part of a society, I just want to do it on my own. But that's not what the spiritual world is about. The spiritual world is about relationships between the Lord and his devotees. And everything's a devotee. You know, the tables are devotees. Your clothes are devotees. Even your emotions are devotees. They're all persons. One's shyness, one's sleepiness is a person. Right? The musical notes are persons. The musical ragas are persons. Everything is a personality. And to be in a fully conscious world of all personalities interacting, you know, there's no just me and Krishna in some void. That doesn't exist. Therefore, Prabhupada says we never show Krishna alone. And also the devotees are the repository of this love of Krishna. So when Rupa Goswami is talking about the five components of rasa or relationship, sometimes we use the word rasa just to refer to what's called our sthaibhav. Do you love Krishna as a master, as a friend, as a parent, or as a lover? And we'll call that in and of itself rasa. But it's not really. Unless you have the other four components of rasa, you don't really have taste. And one of the other components of rasa is alambana. Alambana means the support. And the alambana is divided into there's two parts, actually that's the vibhav. The vibhav is divided into two parts, the alambana and the utipan. So the alambana is the support, and the support has two parts, the vishaya and the ashraya. Vishaya is your object of love, that Krishna is your object of love. But ashraya is the shelter of that love. So therefore, if you want to worship Krishna in a parental mood, you also worship Yasoda or Nanda or Rohini. If you want to worship Krishna in a friendly mood, you also worship Sri Bal and Sudama. You don't just worship Krishna alone. So on the highest platform, you worship Krishna along with the persons who are the shelter of the kind of love you want to have for Krishna. And this is true for the beginner also. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada went through so much trouble to establish a society. You know, as the managers know particularly, yes? It's a lot of trouble. Yes? It's very easy, right? Managing the society? You know, why not we just all stay in our houses and just chant Hare Krishna and forget about having a society? So why do we go to just maintaining a building like this? It's buildings, all the buildings here and all the property, and it's huge. It's not a small thing to manage a whole society. Just the physical property and the expenses, and then what to speak of all the relationships between all the devotees. You know, I must admit, when we produced the Learn to Read books, I was relieved that we could do it all over the internet, and I never had to establish an office building somewhere and manage relationships between 200 people. We had 200 people working on the project, but I never had to deal with how any of them dealt with each other. And I never had to manage a building, and I never had to manage equipment. So why did Prabhupada do that? He says in the Nectar of Instruction, text 4, that the purpose of the Krishna conscious society is to nourish the loving relationships between the devotees. That's what the society exists for. That's one of the seven purposes of ISKCON, to bring us all closer to Krishna and also closer to each other. So this is true even on the beginning platform. How would we know anything about Krishna except through the devotees? Right? There's that song, if Gaura had not come, I forget which one of our acharyas wrote that song. If Gauranga had not come, where would we be? And Jayapataka Swami rewrote that song about Srila Prabhupada. If Srila Prabhupada had not come, where would we be? Right? And my daughter and her Bharatanatyam dance troupe on Purvyas Puja Day did a whole dance to Jayapataka Swami's song, If Prabhupada Had Not Come. So how would we know anything about Krishna without the devotees? Would it be possible? The whole Bhagavatam is the devotees. The devotees talking about the devotees relating with Krishna. Right, in Manashiksha we talk about how Raghunath Das Goswami brought the diaries of Swarup Damodar to Radhakund, where he met with Krishna Das Kaviraj. And every afternoon they would sit and discuss Swarup Damodar's diaries 4 hours a day. And from that, Krishna Das Kaviraj wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Without the devotees keeping diaries, and we would know nothing. We would have no connection. So on a practical level, on an emotional level, on every level, if we want the ultimate attainment of freedom, of liberation, of enlightenment, which is love of God, we are absolutely dependent on the devotees. The devotees who are physically present, the devotees who have been present in the past. And why is it that Nrisimhadeva is specifically saying to Prahlad, anyone who hears about your and my activities will become liberated? So Jiva Goswami explains that in Bhagavatam 7.9.44, Prahlad Maharaj said this very famous verse. He said, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all the fools and rascals. Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse a lot, that our mood is like this of Prahlad Maharaj. Not just that we take the association and the enlivenment of the other devotees to achieve our own love of God, but that we become a devotee. That we also get connected, and then we can, through us, connect others. And also, I'm thinking about when I met Prabhupada in 1974, and my father asked Srila Prabhupada, can I come to the temple if I'm not a devotee of Krishna? He said, I'm just coming to see my daughter and son-in-law. And Prabhupada said, yes, they are loving Krishna and you are loving them. So two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. So at the time, I was sitting there thinking, well, I don't love Krishna. But I took that as a benediction that someday I'll love Krishna. But we should all be acting as Prahlad Maharaj, not thinking, oh, I'm so fallen, I'm not up to the standard, I'm not Prahlad, I can't make it, and blah, 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 blah. Prahlad Maharaj thought he wasn't up to the standard also. You know that, yes? He said, I'm born in a demoniac family. Prabhupada said, virtually, demoniac blood was flowing in his veins. Prahlad felt very fallen. He didn't feel qualified. So if we wait until we feel qualified, my dear friends, guess what? It's never going to happen. Lord Chaitanya didn't feel qualified. Lord Chaitanya said, I don't love Krishna. If I love Krishna, why would I maintain my body in his absence? The only purpose of maintaining my body is to please him, and he's not here. I must be maintaining it for my own selfish purposes. And the devotee said, then why are you crying? He said, oh, I'm just making a show. So if Lord Chaitanya doesn't feel qualified, Prahlad Maharaj doesn't feel, we're never going to feel qualified. Of course, if we're smoking and drinking, that's another thing. But still, we can give people Prabhupada's books. But this should be the mood, that we want to help other people connect with Krishna. So this was Prahlad Maharaj's mood, which Prabhupada says that we should all imbibe, this preaching spirit. That doesn't mean we all have to spend 24/7 at the airport distributing books, but we should have this mood of helping others. Prahlad said, I do not wish to be liberated alone. I wish all to take everybody back to shelter at your lotus feet. So Jiva Goswami asked the question, why didn't everybody get liberated? When Prahlad Maharaj made that prayer, he says, I want to bring everyone. And he said something very interesting. Jiva Goswami says that when Prahlad Maharaj made that prayer, I want to take everybody back to the shelter of the Lord, who he was actually thinking about were the people that he knew when he said everybody. And I think the same is true for all of us. If we say, I'd like to help everybody, we're saying the word everybody, but we're not really talking about, you know, some kid in Argentina that we don't know. You understand? When we say everybody, we mean people that we know, people that we care about. Prabhupada talks about this fact in another, I don't remember exactly the verse, in another part of the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, where Lord Nrisimhadeva, it's probably actually in this chapter, where Lord Nrisimhadeva says that 21 generations or a certain number of generations. Actually, just come here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Look at that. Ha ha, it's right here. Ha, thank you, Krishna. Text 18 in this same chapter, where Lord Nrisimhadeva says that your father's been purified and 21 forefathers of your family. And Srila Prabhupada says here, this means 7 multiplied by 3. In one's family, one can count back 4 or 5 generations to one's great-grandfather, or even one's great-grandfather's father. So I know I've asked people all over the world, do you remember your great-great-grandparents' name? And hardly anybody ever does. So Prabhupada's saying here, maybe you can get to your great-great-grandparents. He said, but since the Lord mentions 21 forefathers, this indicates that the benediction expands to other families also. Before the present family in which one has taken birth, one must have been born in other families. Thus, when a Vaishnava takes birth in a family, by the grace of the Lord, he purifies not only the fat family, but also the families of his previous births. Whoa. So why? Why, when the Lord says 21 generations, does that not apply to this life? Why? Because of attachment. It purifies the people who have a relationship with you of attachment. Do you all understand this? I mean, I remember really only my great-grandmother. I had only one living grandmother when I was born, and I had one living great-grandmother. I didn't know any of my other grandparents, and I didn't know any other of the great-grandparents. So I have no feeling of attachment for them, and they have no feeling of attachment for me. And Prabhupada's point to us in 1974 is they are loving Krishna and you are loving them. Therefore, two things equal to the same thing equal to each other. So it's this relationship of attachment that purifies us. So Jiva Goswami said that Prahlad Maharaj, when he said, let everybody be liberated, that everybody were the people in his circle. But Prahlad still had a desire for everyone, literally everyone, to be liberated. So how would the people who were not directly knowing Prahlad, I mean, can you imagine if we knew Prahlad personally? Right? I mean, we feel affection whenever we see, most of us at least, feel affection whenever we see young children. It's natural. And imagine if that young child was Prahlad Maharaj, how much affection we would feel. So how are we going to become liberated if we're not, you know, Prahlad's immediate associates? By hearing about Prahlad. When we hear about Prahlad, we can also develop attachment. Such a thing works even on a material level. People who write news articles try to get us to have some emotional attachment with people we don't know, isn't it? They'll write about, you know, an earthquake or this or that, you know, a terrorist bombing. If we just hear, oh, there's some terrorist bombing in such and such place and 20 people were killed, we just go, okay, keep eating our breakfast, right? It doesn't affect us. But if they show you a photograph of one little kid, you know, and he's like, where's my mommy? And then we start feeling some attachment. You understand? Yes? So we can use that principle transcendentally. We shouldn't be reading these leelas just to get information as if we're going to pass some exam in a school. This has been one of my objections, at least to the old Bhakti Shastri exams, which are thankfully being changed. But when I used to teach Bhakti Shastri all the time, the exams were just trivia, basically. What sentence is it? In what purport does this sentence appear? You know, could you imagine at the time of death, right, the Vishnu Dutas come and say, okay, here's a sentence. What verse is it in? Time's up, another life. You know, so that's not really the point. We're not reading like that. In fact, Srila Prabhupada didn't like when some devotees in the Gurukula had a trivia contest with the children for Krishna book. And he said, stop it. So that's not what we're reading for. We're reading, my dear friends, to develop an attachment for Prahlad Maharaj and Nrsimha and Narada Muni. That's why we're reading. Because once we get that attachment, then just like everyone else who was attached to Prahlad Maharaj, by getting attached to Prahlad and Nrsimha, we develop our love for Krishna. So, now let's look at this whole huge chunk of the purport where Srila Prabhupada talks about being equal poised in happiness and distress. So, I really don't know why Srila Prabhupada talked about that in this purport. He doesn't explain it. And I couldn't find it in any of the works of the Acharyas. It seems to me that Srila Prabhupada is primarily in this big part of the purport referring to the previous verse. And it seems, therefore, a connection between the previous verse and this verse, because he's repeating two of the points from the previous verse in this purport and more fully explaining the previous verse in this purport. So it seems that there's two possible ways that I could think of understanding it. I'm sure there's many, many, many more. Srila Prabhupada gives many instructions that when we read the Shastra and discuss the Shastra, we should read it from many angles of vision, yes? And he talks about that this is the purpose of Istogosti. And there's a nice way of study that Krishna Dharma and his wife Chintamani Dham use in London in their family that sometimes we will also use in a group where we really get into all the angles of vision of what's here. So one is what Bhagavati said, that Prahlad is setting this example. This is how Prahlad was free from all the miseries of life. This is how Prahlad was liberated. Prahlad was liberated by being equipoised in happiness and distress. That he saw, oh, I have some happiness now. Oh, that's burning off my past pious activities. He wasn't attached to it. And as far as distress, he said, oh, here's some distress. Okay, I'll do some penance or some austerity to mitigate it. That's my duty. But he neither pushed away the distress, nor did he grasp the happiness. And so one way that reading and hearing about Prahlad Maharaj liberates us is that we take on his qualities. By hearing about him, we are able also to enter into his process. We hear about how he developed this equanimity. And another way is that it happens very naturally. So one way is a deliberate way, intentional way, that I hear about Prahlad Maharaj's example. I mean, Prahlad Maharaj had a lot more miseries than I think any of us have or will have. Anybody here had somebody try to murder you ever in any way? Anybody? So he had his father. He was only 5 years old. That's pretty traumatic. You know, if you ever talk to people who were abused by a family member when they were a young child, that's an extremely traumatic situation. And to be abused in a way that somebody was trying to kill you. You know, I'm sure there's more traumatic things in the world, but probably not very many. That you're just a little 5-year-old child and your father, who's supposed to be your protector, is trying to kill you. And he didn't try just once, but he tried it in many ways. But Prahlad Maharaj was always equipoised. He was always equipoised. And he must have had a lot of material happiness. After all, his father was the emperor of the universe. So I'm sure he had a lot of very nice clothes and very nice food and very nice furniture and beautiful gardens, right? He must have had a tremendous amount of opulence. His father was living in the abode of Indra, on the throne of Indra. But Prahlad Maharaj was equipoised. So we can study his life and study, you know, how did Prahlad Maharaj achieve this equanimity in material happiness and distress? That he had some of the most extreme material happiness that's available in the universe and some of the most extreme material distress that's available, and still he was equipoised. But another way is that this is one of the effects of liberation. It's one of the symptoms of liberation. Is that one develops this equanimity. How do we know that by hearing about Prahlad we are becoming liberated, that we develop this equanimity? And it should be happening automatically as we hear about the Lord and his devotees. If it's not happening automatically as we hear about the Lord and his devotees, there's some defect in our hearing process, basically. You know, if you say, we talked about this the other day, if you say, I'm eating, but I'm still not satisfied, you know, I'm eating and eating, but I'm not satisfied, then Prabhupada says either you're not really eating or you have parasites. So if we're still very moved by happiness and distress, even after repeatedly hearing, then maybe we're hearing only officially. Maybe we're hearing as a ritual. I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. I am supposed to hear. Okay, now I have my hearing time. Now my hearing time is done. Oh, what did you hear about? I had Amrita. Can you tell anybody else what you heard about? No. And what, when we're hearing, our emotions are going someplace else. Our emotions are going to, oh my God, I got to do this at 2:30. I got to make sure I remember it. This happened yesterday and I have this problem. You know, our real attachment is not going to what we're hearing. If our attachment is going to what we're hearing, we should become equipoise. And the material happiness and distress should not affect us. And we talked about how that happens. What's the science of how that happens? We all know, even materially speaking, if I'm absorbed in something, then other things are kind of go out of my consciousness. Right? We lose our and we also don't care about them. We also don't care about them. One of the benefits of traveling constantly is that you don't live anywhere. And if you don't live anywhere, you don't really care so much about where you're staying. If you're going to be staying in a place, you know, maybe for the rest of your life, or 5 years or 10 years, then you start to really care. You know, where's this picture hanging? And what kind of furniture do I have? And what's this? And what's this? If you're only staying for 3 or 4 days, then there's a few things that, you know, there's a few things I'll care about. I have to have a nice place for Govardhan, and I have to have a place to use my computer. But everything else I don't care about. Do you understand? There's a very famous story of a British woman who went to India, and she met one yogi who was living with no possessions at all. You know, and she says, how do you live with no possessions? And he says, well, how many possessions do you have? And she said, oh, I just have this little bag. He says, how do you do that? She said, well, I'm just visiting. And he said, well, so am I. You know? So when your absorption is in something else, when you're feeling that this is not your real home, you're absorbed in another home, then you can very easily be detached from what's going on around you. This is also the way I find I can be detached from any local temple politics. It's not my temple. You know, sometimes I'll visit communities and people come, oh, there's this problem, but I don't have a personal investment. Do you understand? I'm not invested. When you're invested, you're like, oh my God, we gotta fix this. So when we're absorbed in Krishna, we lose our investment. I love the pastime of Kaliya for many reasons. But one of them is that the residents of Vrindavan were almost dying when Krishna was in Kaliya because all of their investment was in Krishna. They didn't say, well, if Krishna dies, we still have our home back in the village and our family. I mean, in a community, if one child dies, it's terrible, but everybody doesn't die. You understand? You know, I was in a community where a child died. It was on Vyas Puja Day. We were all eating the feast. There was a swimming pool on the property. She was 3 years old, and she was a particularly not aware of the world child. And she wandered into the pool and drowned. So it was a crisis. It was heartrending. But the whole community didn't close down. We didn't all die. Why? Because we had other investments. The family had, mother and father had other children. That they also had investments in those children. We had our own families, our own home. We had other investments. But when Krishna was there in Kaliya, nobody had any other investments. It's like when, you know, the stock market crashes and somebody had all their money in something, you know, and when it crashes, they jump out the window. So if we have everything invested in Krishna, who's eternal, then we don't have anything left to invest in anything else. And then we're detached. Okay. We may do something out of duty. I may have the duty of having this responsibility or that responsibility, and therefore I do it for Krishna. I got to keep busy until Krishna calls me, after all. Just like when you're waiting for the doctor, there's something to do in the waiting room. There's some magazine to read. Unfortunately, they're not very nice magazines usually. You need to get back to Godhead's in the waiting room. You have to have something to do. So we have to keep busy in this world in Krishna's service until we're called home. But we're not invested. We don't have any investment here. So when we get absorbed in the pastimes of Prahlad and Nisinga, that's our emotional investment. And while we have business to do here, and we may even have to fight for justice or whatever, we're not emotionally invested. Therefore, we're not affected by the happiness and distress in this world. We are liberated from them. And therefore, we are also Jivamukta. So that's what I see as the relationship, both in intentionally that I take that this is Prahlad's example and I learn from that, and also that it just happens really spontaneously, that as I become more and more invested emotionally in the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees, then that's my happiness and transcendental distress, that my mind and heart are going on the waves of the emotions of the Leela and the Lord. And in comparison to which, the emotions of this world are not particularly interesting. And I just read something yesterday for the first time. I don't know if I should say it or not. But this one woman asked Srila Prabhupada, if Krishna is so attractive, so why is there this material world? And Prabhupada said, well, you are a very attractive young woman, but you also pass stool and urine. He said, so this world is like Krishna's stool and urine. He said, don't be attached to it. And so when one is attached to, I thought that was really cool. I didn't know if I should say that. So Jiva Goswami makes the point at the end of his commentary. He says that unless you've met a devotee, you will not end your material life. And once you've met a real devotee, that means your material life has come to an end. As soon as you've met a real devotee, then your material entanglement, your material bondage has come to an end. And of course, in the verse it says, kale. It may take some time. Just like if you take some medicine or you start an exercise program, it's not usually that you feel completely better in 2 seconds. Sometimes, may happen. Maybe some exception. But generally, over time. But one should be seeing some progression. We should be seeing an increase in equanimity toward the material happiness and distress. We should be perceiving that ourselves. We should be perceiving increased inner peace and joy, and we should be perceiving an increased emotional attachment of our emotions and our desires and our thoughts in the Lord and his devotees. So, thank you very much. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements?
It's not the question to say that there is very much to say. Understanding being attached to the devotee is very good to Krishna. He's actually belonging to his family.
Yeah.
That's very good. It's making it very, very real. The Krishna conscious family.
Yes, that's what we're all looking for, isn't it?
Yeah, in the books, so
yes.
It's very
thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
Thank you for the nice question. You raised so many nice points, especially this principle of compassion.
Mm.
I personally feel that without it, actually no one can appreciate anything, even including the Bhagavad Gita. Even Krishna, even this deities, because even this thing of the issue of Prahlad, his type of compassion is something that's very elemental when we compare with the compassion that is exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan, for example, towards other jivas, or even by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I want to believe that Prabhupada presenting this to us and inspiring this in us is to kind of get us to that level of appreciating what Krishna, or even Krishna and Radha, they are all about the most. This principle of compassion really starts also in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. When the same thing is there, when Arjuna is feeling compassion for those who wants to kill him also.
Yes.
And then the Bhagavad Gita will start in the second chapter when they've been told, you're not this body, you're the soul. So I want to believe that one cannot appreciate that and will never appreciate it if there's not this principle of compassion.
Ah, so you're saying that before the explanation that you're not this body,
yeah,
there had to be compassion.
You have to be compassionate. Otherwise you will never appreciate.
Well, that makes a lot of sense if you think about the progression from Anamoya, Pranamoya, Manamoya, Gyanamoya, Vijnanamoya, and Anandamoya.
Mm-hmm.
That Pranamoya is, I see, Anamoya is just everything is a sense object. Even other living beings are just sense objects. They're not really independent entities. The majority of the violence, the cruelty, the abuse that happens is this Anamoya platform. You're food to me. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
You're just food for me. You exist to give me some pleasure that I want, and I don't really care anything about you. So pretty much all of the evil, all, you know, the evil, violence, rape, abuse, verbal cruelty, that's all this Anamoya platform. You're an object. And then there's the Pranamoya platform. That's when you start to see that, oh, I'm a living entity, and there's other living entities. You know, it's a step up. You can't see that if you're on this platform without compassion. It's not possible.
Yeah.
It's not possible. Because it's just like, why are people eating meat? If we try to say to them, you know, this is another living entity, if they don't have this compassion, they can't see it.
Yeah, and I see it also.
They can't see
it. To say, no, don't eat me, but you are abusing body.
Yes.
You know, it's like you are abusing body, killing, you know, destroying the spiritual mind. But you say you don't have compassion for the body, but you have compassion for the animals.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. Like I'll say, some people, they're nicer to the cows than to their wife.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Nice count. You know, life.
And just one last point. You also mentioned that sometimes we should not be too much a part to the environment, and especially happiness and distress. And maybe this may be misunderstood, but I think that the happiness of devotees and the distress of the devotees should really move us, even though we might be detached from our own. But we shouldn't.
Well, that's a very nice. We don't have a Gita here, but there's a wonderful verse in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, this also ties into what you're saying, that the devotee sees everyone's happiness and distress like their own. But frankly, we should also be detached from other people's illusory happiness and distress. That doesn't mean we don't take people to the doctor when they're sick. But we should see that the real source of people's happiness and distress is their connection with Krishna. And I was just reading this morning the 11th canto, where Krishna is explaining to Uddhava that the Bhagavatam and all the shastras, they offer up material benedictions because people aren't going to go for the real thing. So I hope you can understand what I'm about to say. The way that we help people to achieve the real thing is working through their attachment to material happiness and distress, not denying it. If you just go to someone and say, all your material happiness and distress is all garbage, who cares for it? All the things you're worrying about and grieving about and anxiety about and struggling with are all just useless illusions, flickering maya, which is absolutely true. Forget about that and just fall in love with Krishna. 99.9% of people will not even listen. They'll turn you off right there. They'll say, you don't care about me. You know, you don't know what I'm going through. this is impractical, and you've lost them. You've just lost them. So anytime we try to just go right to high philosophy, it doesn't work. Except with a tiny, tiny fraction of people who already know, yeah, this other stuff is just some flickering lights. So if we really have compassion to bring people to real happiness, you've got to do it through their immediate life concerns, even though their immediate life concerns are all, it's a dream. It's just a dream. It's a hallucination. It's an imagination. It is no basis in anything. But you've got to go through that. If you don't do that, you can't preach. So the Shastra does that. The Acharyas do that. Okay, you're concerned about your money. You're concerned about your relationships. You're concerned about your health. You're concerned about this. You're concerned about that. Okay, let's deal with that in a Krishna conscious way. You follow?
Yeah.
Let's deal with that in a Krishna conscious way. How can we deal with this situation in a way that's going to bring you closer to Krishna? You're worried about your relationship. How can you deal with your relationship in a way that'll bring you closer to Krishna? How can you deal with your finances in a way that it will bring you closer to Krishna? How can you deal with your health in a way that will bring you closer to Krishna? Oh, I want to do that. You follow? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's interesting to me. And then as we're using the mechanism of our health, our money, our relationships, our work, our time, our scheduling, to bring us closer to Krishna, we start realizing that it's the bringing us closer to Krishna part that really is what we want. But if you don't do that, I don't think you have real compassion. I think all you have is pride.
No, that's very important.
Yeah. Because you've got to get to people where they are. You have to do that. And it's actually one of the, and we were talking about this the other day, it's one of the offenses on chanting to preach to people in a place where they're not. You know, and this is why great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada will give sometimes radically different instructions to individuals. Sometimes just radically different. So I remember one devotee giving Bhagavatam class right after Prabhupada's letters were published. And Prabhupada didn't want his letters published, by the way, but that's another topic. So he said, yes, this one devotee had stopped chanting his rounds, and Prabhupada said, give up everything, move back in the ashram, and chant 64 rounds. And he said, I've written a separate letter to the temple president asking to facilitate you in this. So the devotee on the Vyasa was saying, so that's what everyone should do if they've fallen behind in their rounds and they're not chanting their rounds. And being who I am, I raised my hand and I said, but Prabhu, in that same span of time, there was another devotee who had stopped chanting his rounds. And Prabhupada said to that devotee, at least chant for an hour before you go to work. Now, most people are not going to finish 16 rounds in an hour. And Prabhupada didn't even say japa or bhajan or whatever. He just said, at least chant for an hour before going to work. So two people with seemingly the identical problem, and Prabhupada gave radically different answers. So that's because real compassion is you've got to try to meet people where they are. Not where you want them to be or where you think they should be or something like that. And therefore it includes some awareness and caring about our illusory happiness and distress. But at the same time, you know, it is all illusion. It really has no meaning. Except as it can connect you to Krishna. Otherwise, in and of itself, it has no meaning. It just bubbles in the ocean. It's just... You know, we don't like to say this too often. People get very offended. All the minutiae of my life has no meaning other than how it connects you to reality? No. You can't say that. Maybe even some of you are angry at me and never going to talk to me again. So this is, you know, it's hard to present things like that. Is that all right? We should end now because we're over time. Unless we have... Or at least someone who hasn't said something I can take yes. But thank you so much. Thank you. Yes?
It's about when you worship with the rich person, you mention and work or worship, the example for is Shrina. If I worship Shrina mentally, you tell me that I can put him in the form of Radha Krishna in the diamond.
Yes, Prabhupada says that.
In the heart?
Yes.
And to bless his feet?
Yes, that's what Prabhupada says. Yes.
And are there something else?
Oh, there's many. What would be best is if you want to, you can just give me your email and I can email you all of Prabhupada's quotes on that. And then, because he gives many different alternatives. We'll also talk, we can talk about that a little bit on Thursday's Manashiksha class. We can talk a little bit about that when Raghunatha Goswami and Bhaktivinoda are talking about the meditation stages that Srila Prabhupada talks about in the Nectar of Instruction. So we can talk about it then. If you remind me, we can talk about it then. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.